Welcome to a new episode of LFC Talk at Hotel Tia. My name is Ragnhild Lund Ansnes, and this morning I am joined by the mighty fine Liverpool legend, as always on the podcast, and the very wise man with a lot of great thoughts about his beloved club, Mr. David Fairclough. How are you this morning, David?
I'm good, Ragnhild. Thank you very much. Very generous welcome. Introduction.
David, we played Chelsea and the first half it looked like Liverpool was on fire, but what happened then?
A good start, I think. As we said last week in the build-up to the game, there was always going to be a good atmosphere on Saturday. I think whilst the Burnley game was the opener, Chelsea sort of presented a different need, and the fans certainly played their part. It was a great start, lots of energy, and all the hopes were there. I think a little bit of a surprise that with the first sort of attack on our goal, they end up scoring, and Anfield went a little bit flat for a while. It was quite stunning how the effect of Havertz's goal was. And it was a case then of, getting the uplift. And thankfully that happened. For the most part, Liverpool played well in the first half, and I thought we're unfortunate to be behind. Obviously, the problems Chelsea create, are there to see. But I thought Liverpool handled it well. The challenge of Lukaku didn't really, it wasn't obvious. Matip and Van Dijk particularly played Lukaku very well. So Liverpool controlled stuff. It was good. We were just a little bit, I said this in the lead up to the game on Saturday morning. These big games rely on taking your opportunities, and we had two good opportunities, and sometimes you live to regret that. And had Henderson made more of his big chance, then I think the result would have been certainly different. I think we'd have gone on to much better things, and I think we'd have got the win out of it. In fairness to Jordan, he's not renowned for his ability in front of goal, and that was a poor effort, I have to say. Elliott had a great start, gradually really made an impact. But again, he missed his opportunity as well from about sort of 8 to 10 yards away. And you've got to take those opportunities, particularly in these big games. Very little splits teams of this standing: Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United, Man City's. But thankfully, we got the goal that we probably deserved, that the equaliser. It's come in controversial circumstances, but I think it was pretty obvious that the handball occurred, and thankfully we went into half-time break at 1-1. But I think the break came at the wrong time for us. I think because with the sending off, they restructured their team. We didn't really combat that sort of problem as best we could. And the second half was very flat. And I think had we been playing till Sunday afternoon, I don't think we'd have scored. It just didn't look like we were ever going to break through. And second half was flat. And probably in the end, 1-1 was a fair result.
But why on earth couldn't we break through with one man more on the pitch and playing at Anfield?
Well, I think obviously in these situations, and it has been said that it can be difficult to play against 10 men. Nothing that much changes in a defence, sort of from the 10-man defensive side. They take off an attacker normally, and then they just get the same 9 men behind the ball, which basically they were happy to do for that second half. They knew they would get the odd break and the odd opportunity to counter, but generally 10 men just bed in. Now, against good sides, when they're reduced to 10 men, if their commitment to defend is as strong as Chelsea's, then it makes it very, very, very difficult. And then you've got to come up with something bright and something innovative and we were a bit, I thought we were a little bit dull. I really didn't see us scoring. And I don't know whether or not it's fair to say you sense that from the crowd a little bit. You know, the crowd didn't sort of, you know, we know many, many, many times the crowd sort of pull the team forward, put the defending team under pressure. I just sense that the crowd has sort of settled to think this is going to be a difficult one, and you know, we're not blaming the crowd, far from it, but the team didn't give anything to the fans to really get excited about. There wasn't that incessant sort of threat on the Chelsea goal for me, so it just petered out. It was a dull second half from my point of view.
Talking about not sort of taking off, let's talk about the transfer window. It wasn't much to cheer for either, and a lot of people are quite disappointed with this window for Liverpool. I mean, I think they were trying to sort of put out the fire a little bit by waiting about announcing the new long-term contract for Jordan Henderson to sort of make that day a little bit more happy. And of course, we're happy he has signed for a long time. He's very vital for the club. But what was your take on the transfer window?
Yeah, I think you're right what you say. I think it was kind of it seems almost like a political kind of an announcement. You know, the way you try and send out a positive on the back of sort of negativity and hope that it disguises it a little bit. But the disappointment is there, and it's obvious. I think we all appreciate the efforts to get our big stars signed. You know, to long-term contracts, Alisson, Van Dijk, Henderson,
Fabinho, Trent.
Yeah, that's all good in
Robbo.
Those ways. Yeah, that's all good. But you know, you can't disguise that fresh blood really brings some energy to the situation. It was always the way to do it. I think what we've seen from some of the other big clubs has certainly created a buzz, no bigger than the Ronaldo signing. I mean, what an absolute mega lift that has given to Man United, even though we don't want to admit that. And I'm not saying that Ronaldo will make the change that maybe makes United look like a favourite to win the Premier League. But it's a positive energy, and the energy is obvious, and that can only do you good. And I think from our point of view, I think it's a little bit sort of... you know, I think very few will look at it and take positives out the fact that we've been inactive in the transfer market. I mean, Elliot coming in is you can maybe look and say, well, okay, there's some fresh blood, so to speak. Konate, great signing, but it happened that long ago. The buzz of that transfer has disappeared a little bit. You know, we wait to see him in action, and it'll be great to see him, because I do think he will be an asset. But that buzz has gone, and we were probably, you know, one of a handful that didn't try to get an uplift from signing. And the fact maybe that there's a little bit of frustration that we didn't get rid of one or two players that perhaps don't look like they're going to be big parts of Liverpool going forward.
And Konate is a centre back, and we've got rid of so many of our attacking force players. Shaqiri's gone, Wijnaldum's gone, Wilson's gone. What are your take in terms of our attacking force now? I mean, it seems like a massive anticlimax, as you say, when the neighbours have got Ronaldo and we've got no one.
Yeah, I am disappointed with everybody. Like everybody, I'll not look to defend the thing. I'm a great believer in the fact that you have to bring some fresh blood into the gene pool, so to speak. You know, you've got to refresh the dressing room. You've got to in excite the fans. Throw a little bit of great anticipation into the mix. And we failed to do that, and I think it's whether or not Jürgen is entirely happy, but clearly the business model does not work in the way that some other clubs do. I mean, the uplift that Manchester United have had from the Ronaldo signing is mega, I believe, from a business sense. Even if
you imagine all the shirts. I mean, all the 40-year-old pluses who stopped buying shirts decades ago, they will go back into that shop and buy themselves a number 7.
Yeah, I mean, there's some news breaking that their share value went up £170 million on the back of the signing. So, I mean, you know, they clearly work in a different, they work to a different business model. And I suspect, you know, Jürgen might, he's very, you know, cautious about sending out his sentiments, I think. But I suspect that there must have been a need for an addition or two to, you know, maybe one in midfield and an attacker as well. I'm surprised. I thought they were gonna pull a rabbit out the hat. I thought they were gonna produce one sort of close to the deadline, and disappointing. But I mean, our best 11 on form is as good as any best 11 out there. But that's not going to win you the Premier League as such, because squad is going to be vital. And I wonder whether or not, once we get into the depths of winter, whether or not, you know, another extra body might be needed. At least, you know, Wijnaldum going always produced a lot of energy. And that was negative. The fact that Genie goes out and nobody comes in to replace him, even though we've got lots of quality. I just think that it's going to be the squad strength that is going to determine who'll win the Premier League.
Because talking about our first 11, as you mentioned, my son here, he is marinated in Liverpool Football Club, and he claims that our first 11 is the best in the world. Will you agree on that?
I'm not sure it's the best in the world, but
in Premier League, obviously. Yeah. Sorry,
we can rival City on our day, and no doubt we can rival Chelsea. I mean, it would have been a great second half, I think. 11 against 11. I agree with the sentiments of the managers. 11 against 11 would have provided a better game, and it would have provided us with better chances to score, because they might have been a little bit more adventurous. They clearly play 5 at the back, you know, however you mask it. You say, well, it's 3 in the middle and 2 wing backs. The 2 wing backs are essentially defenders. And but it would have been a better game. I mean, they just sat in for the second half and didn't move. So we can rival the couple of best teams in the league on our day. No doubt about that. But I think we've also got to produce something different as well. It was maybe, you know, it didn't help that Firmino, who started off quite bright, I thought last Saturday, had to go off injured. To what degree, I've not yet heard if it's that bad, but he looked like he was carrying a little bit of a strain of some sort. And Bobby, when he's on form, is a huge asset. He brings our game together differently. But we'll compete, that's for sure. But as I say, squad strength, there's a little question mark, I think.
It seems like Klopp has been thinking that, you know, our key players are what this team need to win the league. But maybe he did have a rabbit in the hat that didn't sort of come through the ring of the brim. But if there's one thing last season taught us, it's how vulnerable we are with injuries. You know, what happens when there are injuries on those key players? So I am a bit nervous from being so optimistic about this being our year. I'm a little bit more pessimistic right now, but I hope the team can prove us wrong on Leeds and onwards.
Jota is a good, you know, it's not to say he's a replacement for Firmino, but when we lose Firmino, you bring Jota on, that's fine. But then if there's another one, then what are the other options at that point? you know, certainly City don't have those issues. I think Man United, to be fair, have strength in numbers. But so it all comes down to people producing their best form. And I'm a great Mane fan, but unfortunately for Sadio last week, things just, it wasn't his day. He tried and he will do. I remain a Sadio fan. But again, in the big games, your big players have then got to produce that little bit of magic, and it wasn't working quite for him last Saturday.
We are into the international break. And there are issues about the Brazilian players because the Premier League clubs do not want to send their players to Brazil because it's a red listed country right now, which means on return, you cannot get away from a hotel quarantine for 10 days, which is disastrous, obviously, for Liverpool and the other clubs with Brazilian internationals. This is quite a tricky one, though, David, because FIFA can actually now put out sanctions and stop the likes of Fabinho and Becker to play the next game against Leeds. Do you think that will happen in such strange times? Would that be fair?
It's really it's an odd situation, as you say, and I really don't know legally whether or not, you know, who has the strength of hand. I think Spain has tried to take some action to get clarification on their position and have lost. So whether or not, you know, the UK, you know, we as a country or FA are able to challenge ruling. There's not that much time to play with in terms of getting a clarification. So it's a little bit worrying sometimes when you have too many, maybe South Americans, too many African players who go, you know, potentially go missing for, you know, long periods. You know, what with the African Nations Cup and the Copa America and the World Cup qualifying things. I mean, when you have got too many players who are, you know, of that sort of, you know, eligible to play in those areas, you can face tricky positions. And we are one of the clubs who are probably worst, most vulnerable, I would say. So I worry, like all Liverpool fans, because we know how crucial Alisson and Fabinho and Firmino are to us. I'd love to be able to put a positive slant on it, but like everybody else, I find it all confusing. And sometimes you see incidents that occur in the UEFA competitions and FIFA competitions. They don't sort of run along the same lines. Both associations seem to have differing powers, and kind of world football, European football, it's a bit of a mishmash, and it's very hard to know exactly what will actually come to bear. I think there's, you know, plenty of talking to be done in the meantime.
I think they need to use some common sense when we are in the middle of a pandemic, but that's just my take on things. But then I can be all silly and say, but at least Karius is back if Alisson can't play.
I think so. I think a few people's heads dropped then when you mentioned that, Ragnhild. Claudius Carrier is probably not the one we will have to rely on, but Kelleher has proven to be something of a promising inclusion in the squad these days. But no Fabinho, no Firmino. I mean, that's...
Well, I think Firmino is out of the question because he's got a hamstring issue. So yeah. I don't think they can punish him, actually, for what it's worth.
Hopefully they prove that, if he can be fit for Leeds, that it was only a minor sort of strain of some sort, some tiredness. That might sort of still come out in our favour. Against in a team against like Leeds, I think we showed last year that we had two tricky games against Leeds, and they're a team that really do come at you. You want your best. You want your best team against them. Certainly at Elland Road, in a full Elland Road this time, it'll be a hot. It'll be a really good fixture, that one.
Yeah, but saying that though, Leeds hasn't had the best start. They had that shock shower opening away against Manchester United when they got absolutely hammered 5-1. And then they've only drawn twice against Burnley and against Everton, home against Everton and away against Burnley. So they're in the 15th position. So they've had a little bit of a slow start. Do you think they'll climb the ladder and prove themselves better than that?
Well, you know, for Leeds, it's a case of second-year syndrome. They caught a lot of teams by surprise last year. Now everybody is probably better prepared, but they're going to be playing in front of full stadiums, and the Leeds-Liverpool fixture is historically a really traditional, you know, action-packed, you know, head-to-head. I think Leeds are going to be really up for playing Liverpool, and we're capable on our day. There's no two ways about it, but it's a tough fixture. It's nothing that we can take lightly. I think they have a style, Leeds. It's all energy, and it's difficult maybe to keep that up for a full season, and maybe even at the beginning of the season, to actually get up to pace. Four or five games in now, teams will be coming stronger. I mean, the old adage was to say that, you know, you weren't really fit until you probably played six competitive games. So I expect Leeds to be a little bit of a hurdle for us.
So your prediction for the game then?
Oh gosh, at the moment I'm going to take I take any win that we can get. I mean, it's great to win 3-0 and 4-0. I mean, that looks fantastic, but it won't be anything like that against Leeds. It's going to be a closely fought one. The Everton game against Leeds was, you know, nip and tuck. We perhaps might sort of have a similar type of day, but hopefully we come out on top with by at least the odd goal.
Yeah, I'm going for two goals to Liverpool and one to Leeds, actually. Mm-hmm. That's my gut feeling on this one. We normally get this right, one of us. Anyway, so let's see how we go. Today, Jurgen Klopp is getting an award. He's traveling to Germany. Or has travelled already, because he's receiving this award today. It's called the German-British Friendship Award, the first one of its kind. Wow. You think that can give him a little bit of a buzz to go home and have some German sausages and some German beer and get a little prize in his back pocket and then buzz off for for new challenges in the Premier League?
I think Jürgen looks fully charged at the moment. I think he rarely projects anything but a positive impression. He has been fantastic for that sort of. If there was any need for bettering relations between the UK and Germany, Jürgen has been the perfect spokesperson. I think he's so wise and always finds the right words for every occasion. It's you can't underestimate, you know, how much he means to us and the impact he's made upon us. I think he's. He's fully deserving of anything that comes his way. And as you say, a little bit of an opportunity to get back home and recharge the batteries with some bratwurst and beer. That'll put a smile on his face.
And luckily, Germany is green, ladies and gentlemen. It's on the green list, I know for sure, because I've just been in Germany myself. It's always a pleasure. Finally, talking about big occasions, the great Bill Shankly would have been 108 years old yesterday on September the 2nd. And we will be doing a Shankly special last week during the international break. So do not miss the following podcast after this one next week. What would you say to honour the great man, David, at the end of this podcast?
Well, I was with some people yesterday and it never sort of ceases to happen when you meet people from who perhaps aren't directly Liverpool fans. The big question is always about Shanks, and did you meet him? What was his impact? What was he like? And all the words that attributed his way, passion, humour, enthusiasm, love for life, looking on the bright side of things, are all applicable, and I never changed. I never ceased to, you know, speak anything but glowingly about the great man. He was God when I was growing up, and obviously what he means to all Liverpool fans is never in question. And the heritage that he put in place, are meaningful, and Liverpool fans still live by sort of those sort of ideals and standards, and it was just an honour to have experienced sort of to work under him and to later become sort of, I would say, and hope, a friend of Bill Shankly.
Well, I did a walk with his granddaughter, Karen Gill, yesterday, and she said something really beautiful. She said, he's like a lighthouse reminding us of the importance of the fans in football. And I can't wait to hear her share so many more stories about her very special granddad next week. So do not miss that. And then from the week after the international break, we will be back in the hotel with super sound again. We will all be rejoined in the following podcast after that. So please subscribe or follow on whatever podcast platforms you enjoy the most to listen to your podcasts, LFC Talk at Hotel Tia. And please tell all your friends about us. That would help us immensely as we are finally back talking about the incredible Reds that we all love so much. David Fairclough, thank you so much for today. It's always a pleasure listening to your
stories.
Yeah, it's great. Something that we've enjoyed over the last couple of seasons. And although it was a bit sort of stop-start last year, it's great to be back speaking with everybody. And I know we'll have all opinions that sort of some will agree with and certainly some will disagree with. So, but it's always fun to discuss all things Liverpool and some memories as well.
Everyone, take care, and hear you all. Well, you can hear us all next week. Bye.